Hello, and thank you for joining us for our Season 3 finale of Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights, Episode 10, The Wolf. If this is your first time listening to Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights, you might want to go back and start at Season 1, Episode 1, The Egg, so that you can get the full story. My name is Maren Langdon Spillane, and today we are thrilled to welcome back special guest artist Daniel Pertiera. Please check the show notes for links to Daniel's amazing artwork and coloring page. We love to see things you've created that are inspired by FADPAC. We've seen costumes and Lego creatures, clay sculptures, and stuffed animal impersonators, as well as many, many gorgeous drawings and paintings. So we encourage all of you listeners to create anything that you're inspired to while listening. Then, if you'd like, you can share your creation with us on our Facebook page or email it to us at petrathedragon@gmail.com. And now, let us begin Season 3, Episode 10 of Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights, The Wolf. Previously on FADPAC, Beatrice, Edwin, Lyle, Smudge, Tom, Megan, and Carnelian arrived at the Blasted Lands, home of the Rock Giants, where they are finally reunited with Beatrice's missing daughter, Stella. The flower fairy turned traitor, Magnolia, who was secretly working with the Mandibles, a nefarious guild of the Bone-Eyed Spider, caused a catastrophic volcanic eruption, which would have destroyed Beatrice and her family as well as all of the giants. However, Carnelian sacrificed themselves at the last moment, saving everyone, but lost their life. Magnolia was captured by the other flower fairies and shared everything they knew about the Mandibles. With this information, Beatrice, the Giants, and the Flower Fairies prepare to attack the Mandibles' secret island fortress and stop them once and for all. In other parts of the world, he had a different name, a different identity, but here he was known simply as the Wolf. Even here on the island of Ophis, within this mighty fortress guarded by the Mandibles themselves, secrecy was critical. Their work must be protected at all costs. They had achieved so much already, little by little, year after year after year, for generations. Through secret dealings and carefully orchestrated manipulations, the Mandibles had slowly sown chaos, mistrust, and even hatred amongst the different creatures of Dunia. And now it was almost time. The web was nearly complete. The Mandibles would use this fractured world they had brought into being to pit one group against the next until no one power remained whole and strong enough to resist them. Then and only then could they step out from the shadows, take control for themselves, and rule all of Dunia as servants of the great bone-eyed spider. The wolf was walking the battlements of the fortress, looking over the great army that was assembled. The soldiers here and the sailors on the boats in the sea weren't Mandibles themselves. They were mercenaries, mostly humans, who had been paid to fight. In truth, the Mandibles Guild was relatively small. They had no country, no army of their own, just a devout network of believers dedicated to their cause. The one thing they did have was wealth. The promise of more power and riches had recruited many wealthy members to their cause. They had used this to their advantage, gathering a great force of mercenaries for one single purpose: to capture the Dragon Star, or, if they could not, to destroy her. The Dragon Star, who they had hunted since she had been born and would have found if it hadn't been for those weavers. They had gotten there first, snatched her as an egg, and kept her out of reach on Olean, their island fortress. It had taken months to assemble this army, a force that would easily have overtaken those peaceful, simple weavers. But by the time the Mandibles were ready, it was too late. The Dragon Star had escaped, and now her mother was on her way to find her. In truth, the wolf would rather face a well-protected fortress of humans, ponies, fairies, and whaleodons than a mother dragon who was protecting her baby. The fact that this mother seemed to have overcome the weaver's fortress on Olean all on her own only strengthened this opinion. What a mess. The wolf walked by an archer who began to salute him, then withered away from the thunderous expression on the wolf's face. He was in no mood for petty interactions. All his thoughts were bent on what came next. Their only shred of hope lay in the hands of that star-forsaken flower fairy, Magnolia. He had never been able to bring himself to trust the fairies. They were unpredictable, mercurial, too much power. He would work with them if he had to, but eventually they would have to go. And where was that fairy now? Either they had abandoned their mission or failed. Fairies. And if he was being honest, it wasn't just the fairies. He didn't fully trust any of these other creatures he had been forced to work with. The future of the Mandibles lay in the might and supremacy of the humans. Of that, he felt certain. The wolf was full of rage. What frustrated him the most was that he didn't understand how this baby dragon, this dragon star, could possibly stop them. Their plans were all coming together so perfectly. The momentum was thrilling. He could taste the upcoming battles, their victories, one by one, until finally all was won. But this dragon star, what power did she possess? What weapon did she hold? Could he corrupt her and use her like they had corrupted her father? Or would she unravel it all, disrupt, or even destroy their designs? The wolf hated things he didn't understand. It was best to destroy her and be done with it. "Excuse me, my lord wolf?" interrupted a nervous-looking soldier. "What?" One of the ships. The Falcon, sir? Well, it's sinking. The wolf looked out to sea. There were 40 ships, armed to the teeth with archers, catapults, nets, and harpoons. They had been designed to get past the massive force of whalodons protecting the island of Olean, then bring down the fortress walls. Most of their weapons had been placed on those ships as they were being prepared for attack. The loss of even one ship would be a grave misfortune. He scanned the ships in the surrounding waters out to the horizon, but nothing seemed obviously amiss. "And why is it sinking?" asked the wolf, each word dripping with poison.
We believe it's a carpentry issue, sir.
Poor work in the hull, water coming in everywhere.
Then get some carpenters out there and fix it.
Right away, sir. The soldier turned and sped away, but before he could disappear from the fortress battlements, another soldier stopped him and whispered something hurriedly. The first soldier's face turned white. He nodded and walked briskly back to the wolf.
Excuse me, sir, beg your pardon?
Speak.
It appears as though two more ships are taking on water, fast. The Osprey and the Cardinal.
The wolf turned his head again to scan the sea and the horizon. He could make out the distant shoreline of the mainland, but nothing. What in the moon and stars was going on?
"Prepare for battle," said the wolf.
"Oh, wow! Kalima, it is so good to see you. So, I was wondering, do you think...
can the mermaid sink a ship?" asked Lyle enthusiastically.
"Also, it is great happiness to see Warrior Slog at head of dragon and giant armies. The answer you ask is yes. Mermaids sink human boats many times. Salika says it is a process of most deep enjoyment for her."
"Really? How do you do it?"
A small group of giants, Beatrice, Edwin, Lyle, the flower fairies, Megan, and Tom, were all gathered at the water's edge to welcome the mermaids, Salika, Malvina, and Kalima. Dahlia and Frisia had been sent to request their aid in the attack on the Mandible Fortress, and they had arrived quickly in the Blasted Lands, promising full mermaid support for their cause. As Salika described to Lyle how mermaids could sink a human ship, with Kalima interpreting, Edwin turned and whispered to Beatrice.
"Did he just say head of dragon and giant armies? How did Lyle become the head of the army?"
"It's just a misunderstanding, Edwin. I think it's just that, well, Lyle has so many ideas."
"What? I have ideas?"
"Like what?" asked Beatrice.
"Well, okay. Excuse me, Narak, do you think those mice things, the mechanized, invincible, colossal excavators, could go underwater?"
"Edwin, I don't know, but I like that question."
Narak grinned and nudged one of the giants assembled on the shore.
"Hey, Gruntle, what do you think? Can we sink the mice?"
Ow! Yelled Tom suddenly.
Everyone looked at him. Melvina and Kalima had become engrossed in styling Tom and Megan's hair into elaborate braids. As Tom's hair was shorter, it looked like rows of little spikes shooting from his scalp. Melvina began speaking to Tom passionately.
Melvina is asking of you, human Tom, why are you looking at other human so many times and not at Melvina, who is honored guest and great mermaid friend, who saved you from a death a very short piece of days before now?
I was really admiring the braids that Kalima was doing on Megan's hair. They're really amazing, and I help run a pony spa business some of the time. You know, lots of braiding, so I was just trying to figure out how Kalima was doing it.
Ooh, exclaimed Edwin, rushing over. Kalima, these are beautiful. You are so hired if we ever see ponies again.
Near the water.
Ooh, pony beach spa.
Okay, continued Lyle. I have another question. Would you say that the Whaleodons are upset with the warrior tribe of sea cucumbers after all that battle stuff before? You know, because you guys flung the sea cucumbers at the Whaleodons and then they sprayed out their toxic guts all over them until we slowly defeated the entire Whaleodon army, or...
Hey, parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
Are the Whaleodons all good now?
The wolf was now gripping the battlement wall with white knuckles and a locked jaw. His face was the picture of fury, and no one dared go near him unless they absolutely must. All 40 of his ships were now sinking, or had completely sunk, and no sign of movement anywhere, on land or sea, other than the soldiers and sailors who had been on the ships, frantically evacuating and attempting to reach shore with whatever they could fit into the lifeboats. There was no enemy, no action. His ships simply filled with water until they were submerged. They were clearly under attack, but who was attacking them? So much wealth, so much might, just gone. Without a single shot fired, how had they done it? Whoever or whatever they are in the water, he shouted. Tell them to shoot arrows into the water. They must see something. The sea was now full of tiny boats. In addition to the lifeboats, half the garrison from inside the fortress had rushed out to the sea to help salvage what they could, or rescue soldiers in the water. And that's when it hit him. The majority of his soldiers were now sitting ducks, bobbing, nearly defenseless and confused, in the water, wasting their arrows by shooting blindly into the sea.
"Get back! Forget the ships! Get back to the fortress!"
screamed the wolf. But it was too late. His instincts had been correct. He looked up. The horizon, which had been empty just moments before, now held an ever-growing cloud of long, serpentine creatures with wings. More and more were emerging from the water every moment. Whaleodons. A host of them speeding toward the fortress like living arrows with teeth and claws. This was the work of the weavers. It had to be. No one else could control the Whaleodons. The wolf was impressed. He didn't think that the weavers had it in them to launch an attack of this size. How had they found them? No matter, he had to focus. Luckily, the lifeboats were brimming with archers. It wouldn't be pretty, but they should be able to give as much as they got.
Hold your position! Steady! Ready the archers!
Shouted the wolf.
Fire when the beasts are in range!
He watched with heart-pounding impatience as his orders were repeated by those nearest who could hear him, and on to the next nearest, and the next, until they arrived out to the soldiers in the sea. He watched as they heard the orders and looked up to see the Whaleodons. Some panicked and tried to row to shore faster. Others clumsily steadied the boats and raised their bows. These mercenaries were worthless. If only he had some knights from Durga. Their efficiency, discipline, and competence made these soldiers look like children playing at battle. Maybe soon he would have the knights. Only time would tell. The wolf studied the Whaleodons. They had swooped lower but were still too high for his archer's arrows to reach them. This didn't make sense. This meant that they were also too high to attack the boats. There was no harm the Whaleodons could do from such a distance. What were they doing? Before he could figure it out, something started to rain down from the sky. Oddly shaped blobs were falling from the Whaleodons straight down into the boats in the sea. Were the Whaleodons pooping on them? What else could it be? How disgusting, how horrifying, disgusting, and embarrassing to be pooped on by your enemy. The wolf had seen many battles, but he had never, ever seen anything like this. And then he heard the screams. He expected screams, of course, but these were not screams of disgust. They were screams of pain. He squinted, trying to make out the nature of these blobs falling from the sky. Were they moving? Yes, they wriggled and crawled along the bodies of his soldiers. They were creatures, and these creatures were spitting or spraying or exploding some kind of gooey, sticky substance. Whenever it made contact with a soldier, they would cry out in pain and wipe desperately at their skin to get it off. They were frantically grabbing at the creatures and throwing them back into the ocean, but more were now falling from the sky. There were too many. His mercenaries were jumping from their ships and swimming to shore. This looked like it could become a catastrophe, but the battle was not lost. Whaleodons alone could not breach the impenetrable walls of this fortress. If these weavers wanted to get inside, they would have to do so by land. And for that, he was ready.
"Shut the gates!"
he yelled.
"Ready the defenses!"
It looked as though they had plenty of time. The weavers were clearly sloppy in their attack. Had they been more coordinated, they would be making landfall now, while the mandibles were in disarray. But as the wolf looked out to sea, there wasn't an attacking ship in sight. Then, suddenly, there was a tremendous splashing sound and new shouts and yells from the people on the beach and in the water. The wolf groaned. He had spoken too soon. What in all of Dunia was happening out there? What looked like a humongous pillar began to rise out of the sea, and then another and another. They seemed to be moving toward the shoreline, and as they got closer, the wolf could see shapes and details beginning to emerge, a head and shoulders and arms. No. No. It couldn't be. They hadn't been seen in ages. But it was them. Who else could it be? They were too huge to be anything else. Giants. Giants wrapped in armor. They were completely and brilliantly encased in shining metal armor, which poured streams of seawater as they strode toward the shore. The wolf was breathless, frozen. For a moment, he forgot what was going on and what he was supposed to be doing. He was simply staring with wonder and amazement at this magnificent sight. And then he remembered. He remembered that he was defending a fortress that was under attack. The giants were nearly out of the water now, and the wolf marveled at their size and height. The heads of these giants nearly reached the battlements of the fortress, and their shoulders looked to be the width of 5 to 10 horses standing nose to tail. Their movement was lumbering beneath the armor, but fluid and determined. The wolf looked around and noticed that all of the soldiers in the fortress and on the beach were staring dumbfounded, just as he was.
"Fire, you fools! Bring them down!"
The archers snapped back to life, raised their bows, and let loose a volley of arrows. Useless. The arrows bounced off the armored giants as if they were no more than toothpicks.
"Catapults! Hit them with the catapults and harpoons! And you!"
He turned to the soldier next to him. "Ready the trolls!" The soldier stared back at him blankly, eyes wide, afraid to speak. "What's the matter with you? Go get them!" "But sir, I can't. The trolls, they only fight at night, sir. They're sleeping, sir."
"Then wake them up."
"I don't know how, sir. They're stone. During the day, they turn to stone." The wolf grunted in disgust. Of course. He knew this, but had forgotten in his surge of adrenaline. The attack on Olean was going to be at night, so they had planned to use the trolls. Trolls were at least half the size of these giants and could pound their way through the fortress walls. But right now, they were only useless heaps of rock. To make matters worse, stones were flying through the air from the beach and crashing into the walls and inside the fortress. He followed the trajectory of the stones to their origin and saw a row of catapults partially submerged in the water. His catapults. They were being loaded and launched by humans with fins? Mermaids. Well, now he knew who had sunk his ships. They had rescued the catapults and were now firing on the fortress. The wolf was rarely at a loss for ideas for action, but this was something he had never imagined or prepared for. He loathed what he was about to say, but he had no other option. He grabbed the terrified soldier next to him. Go and get the fairies. As the mermaids conversed with the dragons and giants, Magnolia, Frisia, and Dahlia watched closely.
What about us? We want to battle.
Yes, Frisia, said Wisteria. You shall have the battle of your life.
Oh, okay. I mean, I haven't been in many battles, so I'm not sure how to rate that.
Frisia, even if you had been in 100 battles, I assure you this would be one of the most challenging battles for you, personally. And for you, Dahlia.
Why? Just because we're flower fairies doesn't mean we can't battle. Roses have thorns, am I right?
You are right, Dahlia. But if Magnolia was telling the truth, and I believe they were because of our impeccable interrogation techniques, we are facing sky fairies. 4 of them.
Wait, 4 against 3? That is not a fair fight.
Exactly, but battle, like any intimate relationship, is rarely fair.
So true.
Besides that, while we flower fairies certainly can battle, we rarely, almost never, actually, have battled.
Also so true.
The sky fairies love to battle. They are battle seekers, you might say.
Oh no, why?
Because the sky is boring, Dahlia, because battle is their only chance at happiness and excitement.
That is so sad. I really don't love that for them.
I don't think you'll care so much about them once you meet them, Frisia. Sky fairies are utterly ruthless. Carnelian themselves would hesitate to take them on, I'm sure. And it will be up to you two to fight them alone.
That's confusing. I mean, you made that whole speech and everything, so I didn't think you were just going to sit this one out.
All parts of the wisteria plant are considered toxic. I can defeat them, but not if they know that I'm there.
Oh, stealth. Got it.
Lyle had pulled away from the conversation with the mermaids and was nudging Beatrice urgently with a wing.
Mom, what about me and Edwin? We can go, right?
Lyle, I'm so sorry. Between the giants, the fairies, the mermaids, and the whaleodons, I think we have all the fighting power we need. What's more important now is to keep yourselves and Stella safe. I'd like to ask you and Edwin to stay behind and watch Stella and Smudge, along with Tom and Megan.
What? Mom, how could you? We're in this together.
Yeah, Mom, remember? We're all fighting for what's right.
That doesn't mean that you fight when you don't have to. I don't know what to expect from these mandibles, and I can't risk you all getting hurt.
Never bothered you before, muttered Lyle.
I'm sorry, Lyle. It might not make sense to you, but that is my decision. You need to remain here. Keep Smudge and Stella safe. Tom, Megan, is this okay with you?
Yeah, I'm not a huge battle person myself, to be honest, Tom said.
Oh, thank the stars. I would have totally ridden into battle, but I should confess I was not looking forward to that at all.
Beatrice nodded and gestured for Tom and Megan to move aside with her, out of Lyle and Edwin's hearing.
Now, look, I don't want to leave them. Stella is vulnerable, we know this. Narak has assured me that you'll all be safe here with the giants, but please just keep them all together. Keep them safe.
Tom reached up a hand to touch Beatrice's shoulder.
Don't worry, Beatrice. We'll take care of them.
Sir, the fairies say that you must go to them.
The wolf employed every ounce of his self-control to avoid throwing the soldier over the rampart walls.
Who did those fairies think they were? Couldn't they see they were all under attack? The armored giants were grabbing handfuls of stone off the rampart walls, and soon they'd have them pulled down entirely. The wolf's catapults were slowing them down, but not stopping them. Meanwhile, the mermaid's catapults continued to rain stones down into the fortress.
What did they say exactly?
Sir?
What did they say?
They said, if the wolf wants to play fetch, then he can be the dog.
Where are they?
The wolf was twisted into knots of anger, the likes of which he had never felt before.
We're here. Woof, woof, Wolfie.
Gotcha.
Cirrus, brightest bolt of the Sky Fairies, had appeared on the rampart wall with three of their fellow Sky Fairies and was watching the battle rage below, a look of boredom on their face. The wolf hated these fairies. If he could destroy them, he would do so gladly. Their arrogance was unbearable.
Can you help us? He asked through gritted teeth.
Why, you're doing so great.
Can you help?
Say please. There was a long pause as the wolf's expression darkened. Cirrus's smirk grew into a grin.
Please, growled the wolf.
Okay, sure. Thanks for asking so nicely, replied Cirrus. The fairies flew off and the wolf shook his head. They had better be worth this constant humiliation. The wolf watched as the four fairies took position on the battlements, alarmingly close to where the giants battered away at the walls. Suddenly, the air began to cool around him, and the wind started to blow. The giants were moving more slowly now, and the wolf noticed crystals forming around the joints of their armor. No, not crystals. It was ice. He looked down toward the beach and saw that the catapults had already frozen solid, and the mermaids had retreated underwater away from the cold. The wolf could have wept with relief. Then, suddenly, there were two blinding flashes of light, followed by a shockwave, a burst of energy that rippled across the beach and up the rampart walls, and the four fairies were knocked backward. The wolf noticed that some kind of vine or moss had started to grow on the giant's armor, working its way under the ice on the joints and breaking it off in large chunks. The wolf shook his head. Now what? He focused on the two points of light that had emerged.
No, 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 no. Fairies! Two more fairies! Would he ever be rid of these creatures?
The Sky Fairies regained their positions and attacked the two newcomers with inexplicable magic. Lightning flashed and there were blasts of sound deeper than thunder. Spheres of what looked like elaborate floral arrangements grew around the new fairies as defensive shields, and they lashed vines like whips at the Sky Fairies, who in turn attacked with wind that cut like knives and concentrated bursts of hail the size of a human fist. The two new fairies were holding on, but they were outnumbered, and as far as the wolf could tell, were fighting mainly with plants. They couldn't possibly outmatch the power of the four Sky Fairies. Everyone else, soldiers and giants alike, had paused, all eyes watching the battle of the fairies unfold. It was so riveting, in fact, that no one noticed the vines slowly creeping up the walls of the fortress. Up the vines climbed, up, up, toward the battlements just below where each of the Sky Fairies was hovering. As the Sky Fairies sent tiny, sharp crackles of lightning toward their opponents, whose floral shields were beginning to disintegrate, a knot of vines was amassing beneath each one of them. Suddenly, in the blink of an eye, the vines shot upward, erupting with a bloom of cascading purple flowers that looked almost like bunches of grapes. It looked, the wolf thought, like the wisteria plant. The flowers fell upon the Sky Fairies, wrapping them up completely and instantly. The two new fairies fluttered weakly to the ground, their floral protections falling from them in a shower of wilted petals and leaves. A third new fairy appeared, darting towards the descending fairies, joining them on the ground. The wolf looked at the still clusters of vines that sagged against the ramparts, each containing a Sky Fairy and his last hope at holding the fortress. It wouldn't be long now. All would soon be lost. He needed to escape while there was still time. No sooner had he had this thought than he saw her. He'd been so distracted he hadn't even noticed her approach. It was the dragon. It was Beatrice, the Dragon Star's mother. It hadn't been long since he'd last seen her in Durga. In Durga she'd been impressive, but polite. Now she was terrifying. As she descended onto the battlements of the fortress and soldiers ran from her in terror, she looked the very picture of danger and violence. The giants, in comparison, seemed like oversized toys. Then something else caught his attention. He turned his head and saw several more flying shapes. Dragons. Young dragons. The two closest were very young. One was black and one white. Behind them, further away, were two bigger dragons with what looked like human riders. But the closer ones grabbed his attention. One black and one white.
white. It couldn't be possible, could it? After all of the searching, all of the failed plans and strategies, that she could be here. The Dragonstar in the flesh, flying right to him. What should he do? What could he do? The battle wasn't over. Not now. The two dragons were about to reach the fortress.
Kill the white dragon!
He screamed, pointing at her. All eyes followed his gesture. He saw that Beatrice had also looked. She looked surprised. Ah, so she hadn't meant for her children to follow her into battle. He could sense her fear. Good. The two little dragons seemed to notice this attention, and they dive-bombed directly into the courtyard of the fortress. They immediately started rampaging around, roaring, and... was one of them hissing? They were knocking down rows of soldiers like dominoes. It was impossible for anyone to stop them. They were somehow everywhere at once.
What are you, mice? They're just babies! Kill them! Get the white one!
A wolf was racing along the ramparts in excitement. The soldiers began to rally, some of them drawing weapons. Then Beatrice let loose a roar that shook the entire fortress. The wolf could hear her voice in his head as she screamed,
"Do not touch them!"
Beatrice shot down into the courtyard, thrashing her tail and talons left and right, releasing great streams of fire in her path. She was destroying everything around her, and the soldiers panicked and began to flee. The combined force of the dragon's fire and her massive body was wreaking havoc around the courtyard, and the rampart walls, already battered from the previous onslaught, began to tremble and crumble. In one leap, Beatrice reached her draglings and crouched over them, panting and breathing steam as she glared ferociously around her. The two draglings peered out from underneath her, both of them smoking profusely. The wolf knew that no one could reach them now. Beatrice, in that moment, was more insurmountable than any fortress, than any army. The battle was lost. But there was one last hope for the wolf. This island was owned by an eccentric mandible called Talson Bridle. He had raised, from an egg that he had purchased at great cost, a Jormungand, a great and terrifying serpent that was in fact a kind of dragon, but without wings. It lived beneath the fortress, kept there as a kind of pet. He had never considered it a weapon before. It was far too dangerous for anyone. The Jormungand was a destroyer. It would devastate all in its path without discrimination. This was the wolf's only and best hope in this moment. If he released the Jormungand, it could possibly kill the Dragonstar, but at the very least, it would mask his escape. And his escape was the most important thing to him now.
Why do kids bully other kids?
Why does my friend lie to me?
What do you do if your friends say you're bossy?
How can I make a best friend?
Friendships can be complicated. I'm psychologist and author Dr. Eileen Kennedy Moore, host of the Kids Ask Dr. Friendtastic podcast. Each weekly 5-minute episode features a question from a kid about friendship, plus a practical and thought-provoking answer. Tune in to learn how you can build strong and caring friendships. Kids Ask Dr. Friendtastic is available wherever you get podcasts.
Beatrice was trying to calm down. The battle was over. No one was fighting her. Smudge and Stella were safe. The soldiers at the fortress had all fled or were hiding, and they were alone now. But as she crouched over Smudge and Stella, who, she both noticed, were refusing to make eye contact with her, her heart was still racing. Just then, Lyle and Edwin arrived on the battlements with Tom and Megan on their backs. Beatrice erupted at them.
"What are they doing here? You were supposed to be watching them! Do you realize what could have happened? Do you realize what I had to do to keep them safe?"
Beatrice closed her eyes briefly. She hadn't killed anyone, she knew that, but she knew that she had caused damage and harm. And the worst part of it was that she hadn't cared. In that moment, she would have done absolutely anything to protect Smudge and Stella from those soldiers.
Mom, we're so sorry. It was Smudgy. He was out of control. As soon as you left, he tried to sneak away, and we caught him and tried to hold him down, but he is really strong. Then Stella started biting us, and wow, Mom, you know, she's a lot like Smudge. Have you thought at all about how we're going to manage things with two of them? Anyway, she was biting us, like, all over, and we couldn't hold on to Smudgy anymore, and he took off after you. Then Stella flew off after him, so we were going to chase them, and Tom and Megan said, no, not without us, and they leapt on our backs, and we've been chasing them ever since. Is everyone okay?
Beatrice shut her eyes and took several deep breaths. All right, Edwin, it's not your fault. I should have known it wouldn't work to leave Smudge behind.
Before anyone could answer, there was a sudden explosion of stone. One of the fortress walls crumbled, and the tower it was connected to toppled, sending a spray of rocks and dust into the air around them. Beneath the debris, something was moving. Slowly, a shape arose, shaking loose rocks and dirt as it emerged. It was impossibly large, impossibly long. Beatrice could only describe it as some kind of snake, but a snake far larger than any snake she had ever seen before, with pale white scales. As the sun hit its body, the snake shut its eyes tightly, but lifted its face toward the light. It slowly opened its eyes again and looked around. When it saw Beatrice and the draglings, it hissed, and the sound sent a tremor of fear through Beatrice's body. The snake was angry. It was so angry. It began to thrash around wildly. Every movement created further devastation to the courtyard, and Beatrice panicked. Her draglings, Tom and Megan, suddenly seemed impossibly vulnerable.
Stop!
She screamed, and without thinking, she launched herself at the giant serpent. She gripped onto its back with her talons just below its head. The snake thrashed around to shake her off, crashing through the wall of the courtyard and into the hallways beyond, turning more of the fortress to rubble. It was so strong, and it was all Beatrice could do to hang on to it. The snake rolled over, and its weight crushed her. She lost her grip, and then suddenly, instantly, her whole body was wrapped in its thick coils, and they were tightening. She couldn't breathe. Roots and vines erupted from the ground near Beatrice and wrapped around the coils, pulling on them, trying to tug them away from her body. The fairies had appeared and were trying to help, but the snake was too strong. Beatrice saw Stella and Smudge from across the courtyard and could see in an instant what was going to happen. No, 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 no. They would try to attack the snake and they would be killed. She knew it. She had to try something else.
Please,
she reached out to the snake with her mind as she struggled for breath.
I don't want to hurt you. None of us do. Those little dragons there, they're my babies.
The snake paused. It stopped tightening its grip, but it didn't loosen it either.
I can see that you're angry. I don't know who has harmed you, but it wasn't us. Please. My babies, one of them was taken from me, and these people here in the fortress, they were trying to kill her. Please, I just want them to be safe. I just want us all to be safe. I beg you, don't hurt them.
The giant snake turned its head to look at Stella and Smudge. Then it slowly looked around at all the rubble, the destroyed fortress. It looked through a gaping hole in the fortress wall through which the giants and their mice were visible, and beyond them, the ocean. The snake looked up at the sky again and closed its eyes. Then, with a huge exhale, it released its grip and uncoiled itself from around Beatrice. It slithered straight through the hole in the wall, across the sandy beach and past the giants, slipped soundlessly into the water, and disappeared. The wolf had found a boat and was rowing as if his life depended on it, which he supposed it did. Even from this far away, he could hear the crashing sounds of the fortress coming to pieces. He could see the giant clouds of dust billowing above the island, and he could only hope that the Jormungand was destroying his attackers along with everything else. Time would tell. All was lost, but at least he had managed to escape. If he had been caught, it would have ruined everything. His identity had to remain secret at all costs. As he rowed furiously, his mind working through the situation in front of him, it began to dawn on him that perhaps this wasn't a total disaster after all. The people of Dunia were already terrified of dragons, thanks to Shaka Tala,
And now dragons, giants, mermaids, whaleodons, fairies, and some unidentified squishy, slimy creature had completely destroyed a fortress of predominantly humans. He would spread the word far and wide that this had happened. Unprovoked, he would say, great loss of life, rampaging creatures, out of control, dangerous, not to be trusted. He smiled slowly. Humans would be beside themselves with fear. Yes, he could use this. There was no better opportunity to unite humans against all the other creatures of Dunia. This attack, costly as it had been, had perhaps given him the perfect opportunity to make his move. He was suddenly eager to get back to work. After making sure that everyone was safe and seeing to it that the flower fairies were healing any injuries that her forces had incurred over the course of the battle, Beatrice left everyone on the beach and took flight. She needed a moment alone to think. She flew in low, slow circles over the fortress, which looked from above like nothing more than a heap of rocks and rubble. She knew that she should be feeling relief. They had done exactly what they had set out to accomplish. They had destroyed the fortress, defeated the Mandibles, and, despite the surprise arrival of her children, her family was still safe and whole. The few soldiers who remained were apparently mercenaries with no loyalty to the Mandibles, and they were willing to share everything they knew. Narak and Salika were questioning them now. There were apparently a handful of trolls on the island that were currently stone statues and would wake up at sundown, but she was assured that they would remain reasonable enough if they had plenty to eat. So why did she feel so restless, so unsatisfied? Something felt wrong, but she didn't know what it was. She shook her head, trying to convince herself that she was just upset from the stress of the battle. This was a moment to celebrate, even if she didn't know what was next. They had surely made a powerful step to restoring peace in Dunia, though even that felt off to her, restoring peace through acts of violence. It didn't make sense. Beatrice landed on the side of the island away from the forces on the beach. She dug her talons into the soft sand beneath her and looked out to sea. There was no land visible from this side, and she let herself get lost for a moment in the seemingly endless expanse of water, the waves rolling in and out, in and out. What was bothering her? Why couldn't she just let go and feel the relief and satisfaction she sought? It was over, wasn't it? Oh, Beatrice, it will never be over. How adorable that you think one little battle would wrap things up so neatly. Beatrice gasped and spun wildly on the spot, looking for the source of the voice. It couldn't be. It simply couldn't be. It sounded like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Did I startle you? Yes, I'm back. Returned from death and all that. Utterly fascinating story, but there's no time to get into that now. We have bigger fish to fry. Assuming Tommy hasn't caught them all in his mouth while I was gone, of course." Then Beatrice saw them. It was really them. A few feet away from her, on the sand, perched astride Furball, who was looking out to sea, his whiskers blowing in the breeze. Beatrice tried to form the word, but she couldn't speak. "Oh my, I have never broken a dragon before. Beatrice, do you need a moment to gather your wits after my sudden and breathtaking return to this dimension? Or can I proceed with my important message?" Finally, she managed it.
"Carnelian! But how? Where? You? We thought, I mean, we had..."
"Okay, you take your time. And Furball, how did he... when... what... Oh, I swung by the blasted lands and scooped this little muffin up on my way over here. That you would leave your most ferocious warrior behind illustrates your shocking inexperience in warfare. But never mind that now. He's here, and we're together, and that's all that matters." Beatrice took a deep breath.
"Carnelian."
"Yes, Beatrice."
"I'm so glad you're all right."
"Well, I suppose you could debate that. What is all right, when you get right down to it? My former self is not all right. It is part of a mountain now. But my new self is just fine. And here. And I have things to say."
Okay, I'm ready. Tell me. I'm sorry. I just can't believe it.
Yes, it's very fun. Poor Tommy. He'll be in shock and his tongue will dry out. I can't wait to slap his little nose. Anyway, yes, big news. Beatrice, you feel a little unsettled right now, am I right?
Beatrice nodded. Yes, but we were successful, so I don't know.
Carnelian leapt off of Furball and flew over to Beatrice. They looked exactly as they had the last time she'd seen them, only their wings didn't sparkle with diamonds as they once had.
You weren't successful.
We weren't?
So sorry, but no. I mean, oh yes, you destroyed that fortress and got rid of most of the army, and you did so with quite a lot of style, it seems, but this isn't the end. You may have won the battle, but the war has just begun. I think that's how the saying goes. Oh, so ominous. I love it.
Beatrice sighed and sank down into the sand.
I can't keep doing this, Carnelian. I just can't. I don't want to keep fighting. It doesn't feel right.
Carnelian fluttered down so that they were hovering directly in front of Beatrice's face.
Exactly. Which is why you are the only creature for this job. You will not win this war by fighting, Beatrice.
Then how will we win?
Oh, I don't know, but I'm very eager to find out. It's why I rebuilt myself after all. I was with you at the beginning, and I will stay with you until the end, whatever end that may be. So excited.
Hello again. Thank you so much for joining us for Season 3 of Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights. It has been wonderful to be back for this season, and we're so grateful to all of you who were able to join us. If you'd like to know what happens next, please come back for Season 4. Happening... well, okay, we're not sure yet. Hopefully by the same time next year. But it's definitely happening. You can check our website for updates at dirtroadtheater.com/fadpack. And in the meantime, if you have any questions, comments, or artwork you'd like to share, please email petrathedragon@gmail.com. Petra handles all of our communication for us, and she has recently learned how to tap dance.
Huh. I don't know what that has to do with communications management, but... who doesn't love a tap-dancing dragon, am I right?
If you're enjoying Fad Pack, there are a few simple and fun ways to support the show. If you can leave a rating or a review on the device that you're listening from, go for it. We would love that. This is a great way to help others find the show, and it really means so much to us. Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights is a proud member of Kids Listen, a grassroots organization of advocates for high-quality audio content for kids. You can find more great podcasts at kidslisten.org or download the app. Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights is made and recorded by Dirt Road Theater in Northfield, Vermont. Fad Pack is written and performed by me, Marin Langdon Spillane, and written and created by Dominic Gracelin and Oliver Spillane. The music you heard was composed by the amazing Nathan Lee. You can see more of his work at nathanlee.net. Thank you for listening.